That's what I'm talking about, yeah, Tom. Oh, this is classic Shime look back here for you. When I when I first started here, I helped out on the at the time it was the Dale and Keith program.
Mm.
Was producing that program, and that's when we started good old Karaoke Tuesdays. This was the first song I ever performed, Karaoke Tuesday, here on WEEI.
Was Dale singing with you?
No, he was laughing at me the entire time.
Oh, okay.
So. Is that my is that in my future?
I mean, if you want it to be.
I never worked with Dale.
Yeah, Dale was great.
He was gone before I started.
Dale's the best. Really nice. Love Dale. Shout out to Dale.
Shout out Dale. Yeah. What up, Dale?
He did a really good job with Nesson and the Jimmy Fund, which this station also did a phenomenal job of with the Jimmy Fund this past week. We had it, for those of you who haven't been paying attention, haven't been listening, we had the Jimmy Fund earlier this week where we raised over $5 million, which is insane. It's crazy. And we've
well
gotten
over, 5.7.
Yeah, and we've gotten the total the Jimmy Fund has raised with was it with WEEI now is since the beginning of the Jimmy Fund Radio Telethon is $80 million, I believe they've now eclipsed, which is just crazy, 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 crazy. And it's because of the generous, very generous people that live in this very area and across the globe. We had people donating from countries outside of the U.S., all 50 states, everywhere. So we are very lucky to have the support of a lot of amazing people.
Very, very great. 2 days every year, just the most important by far, and it's just awesome.
It's really impressive. But one thing we're hoping is impressive this year is the New England Patriots. I don't know that that's going to be the case, but we're hoping that they'll be at least a little bit impressive. For me, it's really just I want like legitimate competition. I don't want them to look like a bottom tier NFL team anymore. I want them to be legitimately competitive. That's why that 7-9 win mark feels about right. I want to just kind of reset our expectations for the Patriots again, Mego. And it's just like I think that if everything goes right, this could be like a 10 win team. And if everything goes wrong, like at worst, they're like 6 wins. So it's kind of right in that vein for me. I think even in the best case of scenarios, this really isn't a competitive playoff team. But I feel like they should, at the very least, be a competitive football team throughout the entire course of the season.
Yeah, I think we're at the point in preseason where everybody has analyzed and dissected so many different parts of the team. And honestly, looking for where the weak spots are, that naturally people are kind of down on the team.
Yeah.
I think this just happens. When are the vibes the best? Going into the first day of training camp, how's it feel? First day in pads, let's go.
Woo,
like
ready.
These are when the stories and the coverage is so positive because there's nothing else to talk about. Yeah. It's like, okay, new coach. Okay, second year quarterback, let's go. And that's the whole mindset. Now we're at the point where it's like, oh, man, there are some serious gaps here. Look at the depth issues. Look
Drake
at this.
May threw 12
questions
passes. He didn't look great.
Why does Morgan Moses leave at the 25 minutes left in every practice because he's 34 years old? All these questions surface. And I'm going to zag and say that my expectations have just ticked up a little bit. A little bit. I said they were going to be between a 7-9 win team. I'm bumping that up tighter to 8 or 9 wins. I just think that we're going too far in the other direction, dissecting Will Campbell, dissecting the left guard, dissecting all this day-to-day with Drake May. And that's not to say those aren't real concerns. They are real concerns. But I still think that the schedule is really soft. I'm not saying you're a 10 or 11 win team. I think that's too far and a little crazy. But I think you're probably an 8 or 9 win team.
Yeah, I think the softness of the schedule has been slightly overblown. Like, I think it's not.
Look at that schedule.
So the first 4 weeks of the season, you have the Raiders, Miami, Pittsburgh, Carolina. The only, like, softball game in there, to me, is Carolina.
You don't think the Dolphins are softball?
No, I think you struggle with the Dolphins, especially in Miami, every year, even with Tom Brady. I think it's just, that is the Miami effect. They are a division team. Division games are generally not softball games, no.
Let me go through. I'll tell you what's wrong with these teams.
Okay.
Well, the Raiders, I actually think you might lose that game.
Yeah,
but
I think the Raiders are
low-key
kind of good.
But that still puts you at 8 or 9 wins. The Dolphins are going to be bad, and Mike McDaniel is going to get
fired. First coach fired.
He's going to get fired.
Probably.
I don't think he's going to get fired in week two, but I think he's going to get fired before week eight. Steelers, Aaron Rodgers, enough said. The Panthers, expectations were so low with their super hot coach last year that everything that they do look like
Canales
such a positive.
Is a smoke.
Yeah, and he writes very interesting books.
Yes.
Because
he's the former sex addict, correct?
Yes, that's what I think he and his wife co-authored a book about that. Anyway, Panthers, like everything that they do is a positive because they were so bad. I still have questions about the quarterback, Bryce Young. I still don't know if that's the
answer. He looked good at the end of last
season,
though. Like, I think the Panthers will be better than last year. How much better, I don't know.
I honestly think you might have three wins right there. Mm. Like, those teams, those are not going to be good teams.
Best case scenario, I think you're right. You have three wins. Realistically, you're looking at 2-2.
You run into a buzzsaw with the Bills, and so there's no getting around that.
No.
The Saints don't have a quarterback.
Yeah, the Saints should be. Saints are a cream puff game. Totally agree.
Titans, similar mess. There's no way that Mike Vrabel loses to the Titans.
No, there's
no
shot. In no
universe does he lose to the Titans.
I think Cam Ward might actually be better than I thought when he got drafted number one overall, but I agree. There's no shot in hell Mike Vrabel loses that game to the Titans.
The Browns are in a similar quarterback hell.
Yeah, you're facing old man Joe Flacco, Shedeur Sanders, Dylan Gabriel, Kenny Pickett, pick your poison.
So, bro, how many wins do we have there?
So, like,
even if you split two.
But, yeah, no. So, even if.
That's
so,
five wins
so
already.
So, say you're 5-3 through week eight, but then you get Atlanta, who I think is better than you.
Atlanta may be better than you.
Tampa Bay is definitely better than
you're
you.
You're going to lose that game. That pass rush is going to kill Drake.
Then you get the Jets, which is nice, on a Thursday night.
The Jets are going to be, like, one of these teams that you thought you were going to be the last 2 years, which is a good defensive team that can only put up, like, 14 points a game.
And should be pretty well coached.
But you're going to beat them.
You should. Then you get Cincinnati.
Sneaky think you can beat them.
I do not. I don't think you can keep up with the way they score.
What if Joe Burrow, you talk about quarterbacks who might be injury prone.
Fair.
Unfortunate to say.
If you want to talk injuries, maybe. But then you get the Giants.
Absolute joke.
But then you get Buffalo, Baltimore at the Jets versus
Miami.
Yeah, but
look, here we are. Look, we're in the beginning of December. We're in the second week of December. They already probably have 7 wins. Like, this is why I'm saying I don't think that if you can't beat either the Dolphins or the Jets
but that's like,
in the final 2 weeks of the season, you don't think you can get to 8 wins? Like, come on,
no,
dude.
I've said all along 7 or 8. I've said all along 7 or 8. Like, I feel like that's right in that wheelhouse. But, like again, that's...
If you want to schedule the, quote, definite losses, like the scheduled losses on this...
Baltimore, Buffalo, I would say Tampa Bay, Buffalo. Are like the definite absolute
What about
losses.
The Bucks?
That's what I said, Tampa Bay.
Oh, sorry.
The definite losses are 2 to Buffalo, Baltimore, and Tampa Bay. The likely losses, I would say, are Atlanta and Cincinnati, in my opinion.
Yeah, but even still, what does that put you at?
But again, then you're
Do you
like,
think that you're going to lose any of these games because of your incompetency, because of the way the programs run?
No.
So that's why I'm looking at this and I'm saying, I don't think there's going to be some situation where the Panthers blow doors on you. The situation I could see is if you get yourself into one of these tight games and Drake throws a stupid interception or a turnover, and maybe he's good for one of those, for one of these close games with a team that you're closer to.
I
still think 8 wins is like a pretty realistic floor,
because like I just look at it, I think in your division you need to go at least 2-4. Ideally you're going 3-3 in the division, right? Because like,
you think you're losing both games to the Dolphins?
No, to the Bills. You lose both to the Bills, and if you split with the other two, you're 2-4.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You're saying you're going 2-4. Oh, I thought you were talking about the games themselves. Sorry, go on. I was like, let me think about how many games are on here.
All good. Okay. So like, I think in the division, I look at that, and if your games with the Jets or the Dolphins are close, it's going to come back to kind of what I said earlier, where, all right, how does Drake May play in close games? Ultimately, that's going to be
the story of the season. Do you love Drake or not?
Of course I do.
So then say they're going to win 8 games at least.
You say they're winning seven or eight. I have said
no,
that.
Don't say 7. Don't hedge it. If you love Drake this much and you say the only thing that could push them down to 7 games is him throwing a stupid interception or turnover.
No, I don't think that's the only thing that could push them down to 7. Okay. I'm just saying, like, in those division games, I think that's going to be important. But, like, I also think that if Will Campbell gets hurt at left tackle or Morgan Moses doesn't play very much at right tackle, like, you immediately become more susceptible to losing to a team like Tennessee or a team like Carolina or especially Pittsburgh. Like, those are games where it becomes way more of a question mark, and that becomes a massive, massive issue.
We're assuming that Aaron Rodgers shows up to that Pittsburgh game.
Aaron Rodgers can just show up, and if the defense is really good, you're in trouble.
Dude,
if the offensive line is that bad.
On the Aaron Rodgers note, I have gotten really into Jeopardy recently.
I watch Jeopardy all the time.
I watch Jeopardy like every night now. Same. I don't know what's happened
so
to me.
You said earlier you had the YouTube TV split screen.
Yeah.
The beautiful thing of YouTube TV is you can like record it. It's like the old TiVo. And so like we record Jeopardy and just like we'll go through and like watch them all the time.
I don't like that. I like playing it live. I'm like, it's 7:30, put that Jeopardy on.
Sometimes we're busy.
There's no way that Aaron Rodgers could have hosted that show.
No.
In absolute no universe, no galaxy.
No
reality.
But then again, like, nobody will ever be Alex Trebek.
No,
either,
but
to be
Ken
fair.
Jennings is like so vanilla, nice,
he's so much
fine
better now than he was when he first.
Was he
started.
Bad when he started?
Yeah, he was very bland. Like now, at least he can crack a joke and have a little fun. But when he first started, it was very kind of like cut and dry. It was very robotic. It felt
like he wasn't having the snappy charisma.
Yeah, he wasn't comfortable.
I just think
he's
about
much better now.
In Aaron Rodgers' brain,
yeah,
ayahuasca'd out brain,
going to the
he
pyramids.
Thought that he was going to be the host of that show.
Of course he did.
He would be horrible at that.
Terrible.
Like, that show, that would end. How long is it? Jeopardy's been on for like 60 years. I don't know how
insane
long.
Insane amount.
They would cancel it if Aaron Rodgers hosted it.
No, they would have just fired him. That's what they do.
I guess, but maybe they would be like, this is so bad, we'll never be able to salvage
Jeopardy.
They just
get Ryan Seacrest to host both Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune.
I have a take that I've been workshopping in my house, and my husband totally disagrees with it.
All right, fire away.
Final Jeopardy sucks. There should be a different way to finish Jeopardy.
Strong disagree.
I don't like that Final Jeopardy is like its whole own segment, and it's just one question. Like,
why?
They should do rapid fire or something instead. It's boring.
What
it's
do you
like
mean,
one
rapid
question.
Fire?
Like you do, like the like you only have 10 seconds for each question, and you have to go as fast as you can.
Like a lightning test? Round.
Yeah, lightning round, rapid fire, same thing.
Yeah, but you can't like wager on that. That's the issue, and that's how you have
no,
like
you
the
wager
dramatic
on, like,
comebacks.
You wager on if you win the most questions.
But what
I
if everybody?
Know.
But
look,
what if everybody
I'm not,
gets
I'm not
10 questions?
Jeopardy. I'm just saying, one, Aaron Rodgers should never be allowed
that
on the studio lot again, where Jeopardy is. And two,
I couldn't agree more.
Final Jeopardy sucks. Like,
disagree.
It's so fun to play. Okay, Jeopardy, and then you get to double Jeopardy, and you get to go through all the questions. And my husband also said that I'm like he said I have a James Harden approach to Jeopardy, where I just. Say, I have an answer for every question, even if it's completely wrong.
Okay, I get it. So you're just throwing up shots no matter what.
So I'm like, rhombus. And they're like, parallelogram.
The Michael Scott approach. Yeah. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Exactly.
Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott.
But Final Jeopardy, it's just like, okay, so we have one question and we just sit here and wait. And if you don't have it, you don't have it. And that's it feels anticlimactic.
Yeah, but it's what really separates the great competitors from the lesser competitors, because a lot of time in close games the great competitor's always going to get the Final Jeopardy question, always, and the lesser ones aren't. So like you might get lucky where you get a couple good categories in regular Jeopardy where you're really good.
Oh my
and
God.
You dominate.
There was a baseball category the other day and my husband was stoked.
I had a Batman category a while back. Like, I get it. Like, there's just moments. Greek mythology, I feel really confident. Like, it's like, all right, let's cook.
And then, sick brag, bro.
Thank you. But then when you get to Final Jeopardy, it's like, all right, U.S. history. It's just a broad topic, and it's one question. And it separates the real competitors
and
from the weak ones.
They'll be like, Franklin Pierce's right-hand man. I'm like, Abraham Lincoln.
They don't know what the they're doing. You understand that?
It's just like, look, I think Final Jeopardy is phenomenal.
I knew somebody who was like in an early tryout phase of Jeopardy once, and he said that the hardest part is the buzzer. Hitting your buzzer, like timing the hitting of your buzzer is really difficult.
Because like I've always wondered, because you can't like buzz in early anymore. I feel like in the early stages you could buzz in early before Alex finished the question, and then like, but
it's
he doesn't.
Very rude.
But he stops, and then like if you get it wrong, he then finishes the question or something like that. But now it feels like you can't ever buzz in early. So I'm curious if it locks you out if you buzz in too early. Like if it has like a 3-second lockout,
to cheat on the buzzer.
Yeah, and I'm curious, because like if it's just if it's a reaction time thing, I would crush. I'm so good. Like Mario Party, like mashing buttons. I'm so good.
You like
I would
put
crush.
The Jeopardy buzzer in flip mode. You're like, let's get crazy.
Yeah. Like the way some people hold the Jeopardy buzzer is hilarious. Like they'll hit it like this. And I'm like with
please
their palm.
Please don't do that action. Please don't do that.
At least we're not live on Twitch. And it's just like they hit it so weird. I'm like, what are you doing? Just use your thumb. You dope. It's not that hard.
I also like in every, I'll say this because I know we got to get back to sports.
Nah.
But every Jeopardy show has one person who you're like, that person's a dork, but they're cool. Like,
yep,
they're 100%. A dork. They're a dork,
and
but they
you
know
see
they're a dork.
One guy pops up on the screen, nerd!
Yeah, there's one person who you're like, ugh, I don't like them. And it's usually the shirt that they're wearing or like the way they part their hair or something. You're like, ugh, I don't like that person. And then there's one person who just is an alien who's from a completely different existence. And the person that was on the Tournament of Champions that they were running over
there's
the last
lot,
couple of weeks.
A lot of great people in Tournament of
there
Champions.
There was one guy who
this is a replay
they
reruns.
Asked him, Shime, what his most prized possession was, and he said his last generation iPad. He said it was a 7-year-old iPad.
There was a guy.
I was like, we're doomed. We're doomed as humanity. This man's most prized possession is an iPad from 7 years ago.
There was a guy on there this past season who won. He won like 4 or 5 straight games, and he looked like a child with a doll head. It was like I'm like, this guy, he looked 7 and he was
what is
awesome.
A doll head?
Like his head was way too big for his body.
Oh, interesting.
And so, but he was so much smarter than I will ever be. It was tremendous. He was like 21 and he just crushed. And I was like, this guy's kind of cool. And he had like 0 personality. He was so vanilla. He looked like a doll.
He was locked in.
He dominated.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was impressive.
Okay. Well, should we get back to football on the other
side?
Okay, this was a lot of Jeopardy talk.
Yeah, I wish we had Twitch to watch this right now. Yeah, I was doing the weird
motion. You missed the sizzling bacon, too.
Yes, you did. You got to do that the next time you're on Twitch. 617-779-7937. More Mego and Shime coming up. But right now, Tom, going to get you caught up with what is trending. Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Young Tom, you big Noah Kahan guy?
Yes, but I like this song better when Olivia Rodrigo covers it.
Okay.
Yeah. Ooh, I love Olivia Rodrigo.
Yes, Mego.
Like addicted to Olivia Rodrigo.
That's my future wife.
She's awesome. She's
neat.
I
want
to go here.
Go for it. Cook.
She's so much better than Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Yeah. It's different. Like I don't.
I'm not
excited
a
for the
Swift.
New Swift
I'm not like a Swiftie, and I'm not a Swift hater. But Olivia Rodrigo's music is actually fun.
Some of it, yeah, I would agree.
What do you mean some of it?
Some of it's too slow for me.
Oh, I don't listen to the slow stuff. I only listen to stuff where she's being bratty.
Yeah, that I'm into. I like that. I'm down. To be honest, I am very much a like pop girly at heart. Love it.
Oh,
I love
really?
It. I love it all.
That's sweet for you. Yeah. I'm not.
Fair enough. But I
can appreciate good pop music when it's good pop music. I'm not a snob about it.
Yeah.
Like, or I try not to be.
Like the Chapel Roan.
Yeah, Chapel Roan slaps.
Lady Gaga's last album was a banger.
I'm not too familiar with that one.
I'm a Gaga guy. Big fan. But, you know, this isn't the music hour with Mego and Sean. Instead,
no, that was the first hour of the show.
You're right.
This show has been off the rails today, so I apologize for people who are looking for really intense criticism of the Patriots. But
unfortunately, they haven't done enough for us to intensely criticize. We've done the same stuff for the last, like, 2 weeks.
I'll tell you this much. Mike Vrabel is very intense about the leaks that are coming out of his building or whatever is happening with the team.
Was not great.
He's not pleased with the current media ecosystem as it's been operating.
The other day, Jordan Schultz had the report that Jalen Polk would miss the entire season because he would be getting surgery. And so he would be on the IR and miss the entire season. And Mike Vrabel was not pleased with it and was asked about if he had any more updates or any more information on the Jalen Polk surgery. And this is what he said.
There's a report today that Jalen Polk will have to have season-ending shoulder surgery. Can you add anything to that?
No. I don't know, other than I'd like to find out where some of these come from. You know, some of these rats around here, so we'll figure that out.
Blago. Not me? Not me? I didn't have that report.
I'm curious your thoughts. We talked a lot about this on the morning show, And some people believe that the rat could be Elliot Wolf.
No. What?
Who would you think the rat is?
Why would it be Elliot?
That's a great question. Because he doesn't want to see his draft pick be a total failure and get cut and look even worse than he already does.
Because of Jalen Polk getting injured, they...
No, so they put him on IR while Mike Vrabel was in the process of trying to find a trade for him?
Maybe there's information out there I'm not aware of.
I didn't say I was the one who said this. I just said others have said this, so I was curious.
Interesting theory.
Who do you think he's referring to when he means rats?
I think if I had to guess, it would be the way that these things often work is somebody's agent represents more than one player on the team, and they talk to their agent, and their agent is maybe chatting up somebody else.
Jordan Schultz.
And then maybe talking to a reporter or an insider and says, hey, by the way, here's what's going on with this other guy. Or this is the way information gets shared. I mean, a lot of it is at the agent level. That's me. I don't like pry into trying to guess what other people's sources are. But overall, that is the way a lot of NFL locker room information works. Like, you can go straight to people and get it straight from them. Maybe there is somebody in the front office who's doing that.
It just feels like this would have been a very limited group of people who knew that Jalen Polk was going to be on IR.
I'll tell you this much. I don't think it's about Jalen Polk's story. I don't think that's what he's mad about. I think he was probably more upset about the reports that came out that I saw that Andrew Callahan had that Anthony Jennings and Kyle Duggar were on the trade block. Because I think that's more the kind of stuff that he wants to control the messaging of. And to me...
But the Kyle Duggar one's been out there for a while, it feels like.
Well, and it's also something that you could just surmise if you're watching preseason
games. Yeah,
it's
very easy to kind of take a guess at.
But I think the biggest takeaway for me from this whole messaging that he had is he's trying to protect himself.
Yeah.
Because he saw what an utter S show it was last year with Jerod Mayo and how... the messaging and the leaks and even what people were saying in the locker room to reporters was so completely dysfunctional and out of control, and how much that fed back into the dysfunction of the team and the operations, that he's saying, not under my watch. That is not how we run things here. You talking to your agent about something? We keep it in-house. We keep this strictly business. We do not bring our business. We don't throw our business out on the front lawn. You got a problem. You're not ripping my shirts out of the drawers and throwing them on the front lawn in front of the entire neighborhood. That's not what we're doing. That's the message that I got.
So you think this is a message directed to like everyone on the team, like, hey, this is a culture building moment. Like, we're not doing this crap like it had been in the past, calling out like specific rats in the building.
Yeah. And I think it's
interesting.
It's a protective measure for himself because he knows that it was a mess last year, and he's saying we're not doing that again this year.
So he's taking kind of a page out of the classic Belichick playbook, where it's like, yeah, we're not airing this stuff out in public and with the media and stuff like that. We are gonna keep loose lips sink ships, I think is how they say it.
And I do think it's important to distinguish that there's a difference between Vrabel doing that and being Bill in the way that he deals with the media.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
Vrabel, it's very early, and this can change a lot, but he answers questions about why Keon White was playing in that third preseason game. He basically said, I wanted to see something different from him.
Yeah, but
like,
then again, that's
a real answer.
He also does the Belichick thing, though. We specifically asked him about Stephon Diggs and not playing in preseason games, and his two-word answer was coach's decision. Yes. So, like, he does have his Belichick moments as well.
I think that was personally against you, though.
That wasn't against me. That was against Courtney.
But he knew you were part of the show, so he was like,
he
that
hates
guy.
Me? Why would he hate me?
I don't know. It's just I heard it from a rat. He was like, keep that slime guy away.
Oh, God.
I'm just kidding.
That's all right.
Don't worry. He has
sorry,
no
we'll
idea.
Just interview Bill O'Brien.
He doesn't
he
know who
me.
Any of us are.
Yeah, it's true.
He's wagging his finger
Stacey
at
will
Phil
tell him
Perry.
Before.
That's about it.
Phil, I don't know where you went to college. I know it wasn't Ohio State.
I do. It was Georgetown because we have a rivalry with GW Georgetown when Phil and I talk about the old haunts that we have in D.C. Why are you laughing? That's real.
Okay. I'm happy for you. I think it's great.
Look, just because my school is not as fancy as Georgetown.
Yeah, you know.
They're both.
Okay.
Let's be serious. They're both fancy schools.
Yeah.
We're both great a couple schools. Of privileged brats.
One's a Jesuit school, the other's not. So, you know.
So?
I just went to a Jesuit high school.
I love the Jesuits.
I'll side with Phil Perry here.
The Jesuits are the coolest part of the Catholic, overall Catholic experience.
St. Ignatius set the world on fire. There
Shout out to the Paulus Center, too. I like those people.
Okay, cool.
Shout out, Jesuits!
Yeah, we have been all over the map today. It's been kind of fun. Let's go to Bill in Newton, wants to talk about the Pats rat. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, Sean, you said loose lips sink ships. You know, I thought that we realized that didn't matter after Brady retired and the friggin' actual ship sank under the most unloose lips coach of all time, Bill Belichick. I don't think any of that stuff matters. And even if it did matter, do you really think a second-round bust wide receiver who is probably going to get cut having surgery is really something that Vrabel was telling everybody, make sure this doesn't get out? Are you serious? Well, I don't see how Vrabel would have thought that's a big deal.
So if he was, Bill, I would pose it like this: if he is trying in the process of trying to trade Jalen Polk so that they don't have to cut him and they can get something for him, and then ultimately they're like, all right, we don't want to cut him. We're just going to put him on IR. Wouldn't he then be pissed because it looks like he's doing deals with other teams in bad faith?
Well, I think that you can't trade a guy because you would have had to disclose that information anyway that he was hurt. There's no chance tradable.
To me, it's not that he's actually hurt. They're doing this so that they don't necessarily have to cut him to put him on the practice squad, but they also don't have to have him on the roster.
Shine, you really think they're going to do surgery on a guy that doesn't need it?
Well, I'm just saying, I mean...
No way. They don't do that. I know what you're saying, but the guy's hurt, and he was going on the IR no matter what. I just don't understand why that would be such a big deal. I mean, I could totally see a Patriot employee giving that to a media guy thinking it wasn't a big deal. I mean, if you're talking about legit trade guys like Duggar or Keon White, I get that. You can't have leaks. But I don't know. If he's going to go all Belichick, it's going to go backwards on him.
Yeah.
All right, thanks for the call, Bill. Appreciate it.
That's why I think, as I said, with – it was about that particular question and that leak that came out about Jalen Polk's shoulder, but I don't think it was just about Jalen Polk.
So it just happened to be the question he was answering and not necessarily the question that pissed him off.
And look, if you were listening to any of the guys across the street who have him on for their pregame show,
mm-hmm.
he took his newspaper rolled up and smacked Scott Zolak on the nose a little bit. For the asking about the Anthony Jennings and Kyle Duggar reports that Andrew Callahan had.
Interesting. Okay.
And said basically like people make up reports or basically like people put out reports that aren't true. He didn't say that specifically about Callahan's report, which I think is very understandable and believable. And it probably is true. But I think he is at a point now where he's like had answered questions about that. Now he's got this Polk thing and he's going... I think Vrabel's mentality from talking to guys is very much this. You come in here and you work and you do your stuff every day that you're supposed to do. You will know exactly what to expect from me. You will know exactly who I am every day, what my expectations are, and that's our relationship. I am giving you a stable workplace where you know what you're supposed to be doing and you know what you're going to be met with every day within my control. So when I come in, I don't want to be blindsided by some crap that is out there because of people talking.
So, but like, how do you weed this out then? Because like, don't you think this would have reared its ugly head a little bit earlier at some point instead of, I don't know, 2 weeks before the season starts?
I think it goes back to, I mean, what he was upset with from what I'm guessing is like reports earlier in the summer about, oh, they're not happy with Stephon Diggs. Remember that?
Yes.
Remember when there was chatter after the pink... fun pink bag boat trip that it was like, and by the way, Stephon Diggs
hasn't
been
out there. I think Phil Perry has called him a pain in the posterior. Yeah, it was one of the reports he had.
And that might just be Phil like reading the situation.
Yeah,
I don't think somebody turned around and said that to him, but at least he didn't portray it that way in that conversation. But I think that there's this overwhelming trying to be proactive. Hey, we have like 48 hours where two different reports are coming out of stuff that is true about us, and I don't know where it's coming from. I'm not standing for that. I think that's the message that he's sending. I don't think it's about, like, hate the media.
But it's such minor information. Like, it's not...
Right, but isn't that where it starts?
I guess, but like you pointed out, with the Kyle Duggar thing, I could have guessed that he's on the trading block. Tom Curran kind of predicted that he would be on the trading block before training camp even began. Mm-hmm. That's something we all kind of expected anyway. So it's not a report that he should be super upset about. Like, we all kind of expected it, and the way he's playing in preseason games, I mean, he played till the very last snap of the second preseason game.
Right.
Like, we can kind of figure it out, Mike. It's not really, we don't really need a report from the inside to make that decision or make that opinion. You know what I mean? So, like, I just feel like that would be a very weird one to get mad about. And then again, like Bill pointed out, who cares about, like, Jalen Polk's on IR. Okay. So what's the big deal about him going on IR? Why does that matter? Unless you were trying to trade him and now you look like you were operating in bad faith.
I agree with Bill. I don't know anyone that would be interested in him with the having to go through shoulder surgery again.
So I don't disagree. But, like, again, my point would be then, why does that matter? Like, why is it a big
because
deal?
It's indicative of the overall thing. And I think that he knows that a big part of why Jerod Mayo lost his job last year is the optics of the entire operation. It looked
like
a clown
show. But if you're putting Jalen Polk on IR already later that day anyways, and it got out like 4 hours before
you
put him on IR.
Yeah, I agree with you that it's... I agree
it's not
with
really
you,
a big leak.
I agree with you that the leak
Jalen
itself
Polk
is
Because
Jalen
Polk probably told his agent, and then his agent
told
somebody.
That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying. That's how stuff works, and a lot of times how it comes out. It's very rare that somebody is calling up somebody and saying, exactly, this is what's happening, and you can run with it. Like, I think that it is through the grapevine stuff, and that pisses Vrabel off. He's like, I'm not having this. I'm not having a situation like I watched last year. This is not the kind of operation I run.
Yeah, I don't know. It feels like there's something more to it than
that. So you think it's Elliot Wolf?
No, I don't think it's Elliot Wolf. Other people have suggested that. I don't think that that's the case. I feel like in this case in particular, when it comes to Jalen Polk, to me it felt like some lower level coach, maybe like a guy that happens to work with the receivers or something. I'm not naming names or saying anything like that, but sometimes he may have just said something to someone, and like you said, it goes through the grapevine, gets to Jordan Schultz and gets out. And then that guy is like, oh crap, what did I do? And like, it's a mistake. But like, again, like, I don't know. It doesn't feel like there's a big reason to be, there's rats in the building, unless he feels like there's a rat problem.
Yeah, I also wonder how much he was just being a little snarky variable.
Maybe. That's possible. He delivered it
deadpan. So.
He did walk out with Morgan Wallen last night. So, did you see that?
I don't like Morgan Wallen.
Oh, yeah. He does. It's okay. Yeah, country artist who does the little walkout thing at every city, and
yeah,
he has like a local guy with him.
Everybody was excited about it last night. I was like, ugh.
Yeah, Vrabel walked out with him, so I was just...
I mean, fine. Like, Vrabel must
be a fan.
Do your thing. Yeah. Like, to each their own, but no thank you with that concert.
Fair enough. 617-779-7937. Mego and Shime here on WEEI. One more segment to go, and then we'll get you ready for the Mass Mutual Red Sox pregame show right here on WEEI. Great song. Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Final segment for you here before you get ready for the Mass Mutual Red Sox pregame show. Leading into Red Sox Yankees first pitch 105 right here on the Shaw's and Star Market. WEEI Red Sox Radio Network, Garrett Crochet on the mound for your Red Sox. It is a Crochet day. But we were just talking a little Patriots. Mego, you mentioned there is an article in the Globe from Ben Volen about the NFL on CBS crew talking about Mike Vrabel. Had a couple quotes you wanted to read. What do you got?
Yeah, this is pretty interesting. NFL on CBS announcers. This is a series of interviews that I guess he went up to New York and talked to the NFL and CBS announcers. And one that jumped out to me is Logan Ryan, who is new and he's going to be calling just a few games, I think.
He played for both the Patriots and for Mike Vrabel, correct?
So Patriots from 2013 to 16 and Vrabel from 2018 and 19. And he says... Vrabel made it very clear what the standards were going to be when he was a coach, similar to Bill Belichick, and that was very different from what Tennessee was used to. He challenged the top players right away, and they weren't used to that. I remember Taylor Lewan being one. He definitely had a tough time. He wasn't used to hearing that stuff.
Interesting.
But this is what he added about what his expectations for this year's Patriots are. He said, I think the Patriots are the most exciting team in football this year.
Wow, that's big praise. I'm listening. My ears have perked up.
I think they got the right man at coach. They have a quarterback coming off a good rookie year with good talent around them. They have, in my opinion, a top five defense in the NFL.
Wow.
Definitely a top five secondary. And I think sky's the limit. Buffalo's the top of that division right now, but I think the Pats will be knocking on the door there. And the playoffs should be well within their expectations. I know Vrabel will take it one game at a time, but I think their fans should be really excited. How about that?
That's great positivity from a former Patriot, former Vrabel guy as well. Like, I think he's, you know, pumping up his old coach a little bit. But at the same time, you know, if he's right, if they're a top five defense, I agree. Like, if this defense ends up being a top five defense, you should be in the playoffs, or at least in the playoff hunt.
Do you want to hear from Tony Romo?
I love Romo.
Okay, I'm not doing a Romo voice. Jim!
Oh. Watch out here. He's going to motion left, and then he's going to sprint down the field.
So he says, I'm excited for people to see how this develops because Vrabel is a great football coach. This is a team that could come on very fast. You put Vrabel and Josh McDaniels together, you get a young quarterback, and you got some juice. I'm just saying that team, don't be surprised if they have a really good season this year. I see the signs of this turning around very fast. They're one of my surprise teams.
Interesting. Yeah, they have been what seems like a very trendy surprise playoff team for a lot of people. I've heard a lot of different writers and analysts talk about the Patriots in that way, and I would love that. If they make a playoff push, I would be all for that. I think they need to be like in the hunt, but I don't know that they're going to actually get to the playoffs. They need to be, I think they need to be in that vicinity, though, for sure.
Just a couple more notes here about voluntary participation this offseason.
Okay.
If you remember, a lot of these free agent signings had participation bonuses in their contracts. So Volan notes here, Mike Vrabel got good buy-in from his coaches during the first voluntary offseason program, but attendance was robust during the practices open to media, but not quite as robust as originally thought. We already knew free agent cornerback Carlton Davis and receiver Stephon Diggs didn't earn their offseason workout bonuses. They would have been earned by participating in at least 27 of 32 sessions, though Diggs did attend more after his Miami boat incident. But running back Ramondre Stevenson and right tackle Morgan Moses also didn't earn their bonuses per NFL Player Association records, as well as backup safety Marcus Epps.
I know Epps was dealing with an injury and stuff, though. I know Vrabel had even talked about him coming back. He's battled back from an injury he had last year. So
Ramondre, I think, had a death very close to him.
Yeah, he had a family issue that he was dealing with off the field. And then Morgan Moses, another guy recovering from injury. So, like, and Stephon Diggs, also another guy recovering from injury. I mean, he was also doing some other things, but when three of the four are recovering from injury, one had a personal thing he was dealing with, and then it's just Carlton Davis. I mean, if those are really the only five, like, that's of note. That's not bad. That's pretty good participation from your team, I would say.
No,
and all those guys being veterans, too.
I do wonder, like, I think that Vrabel's had a pretty standard training camp in preseason in terms of the toughness of it, like the physicality and how long the days are and everything. But I do wonder about guys like Carlton Davis, like Morgan Moses, who are brand new to this team. Like, Robert Spillane's been out there nonstop.
Yep.
Harold Landry's been out there nonstop. And then you have these other free agents signings who have just participated so much less. I wonder how much they're going to hit the ground running right away. And I say that in the same vein, thinking, what is Mac Hollins going to be when he finally joins this program? And I think overall, Mac Hollins has been pretty good.
Yeah, I mean,
like,
so far.
He fit in. He's had some drops, but
seems like him and Drake, like,
he's fit in pretty seamlessly as soon as he got in. He got off the PUP list right before the in-stadium practice that they had a couple weeks ago where Kendrick Bourne got injured.
Mm-hmm.
And Mac Hollins was kind of right away what you expect him to be.
Yeah, and I think, too, he unlocks so much for this team just kind of being on the field because he's that big-bodied guy that can play on the outside. It allows Stephon Diggs to play in the slot a little bit more if he wants, or if you want to put him and Hollins split out wide, you then have Pop in the slot, and it kind of just opens up options for the offense, I would say, just by having Mac Hollins available. And he's been pretty good in the limited amount of time he has been available, which is nice. So, I mean, like, if you're getting 500-600 yards from Mac Hollins, that's huge, because that's more than what he has done normally in his career, and that's a great year from a guy who came into the season a little banged up and would be a good offseason acquisition.
Yeah, I tend to think he's like a situational guy.
Yeah.
And that's where he functioned a lot with Buffalo, and
definitely,
I think that's what they're going to try to do with him here. My question is, Who's your receiver? This might be where Stephon Diggs works in. Who's your receiver who's helping move the chains down the field?
Yeah,
because you have a couple guys, like, and maybe this will just be all about the Josh McDaniels system, where it's screens and it's these out routes to guys like, you know, in quick slants and all.
Because my immediate thought was Pop Douglas.
Yeah, but is that your only look? Like, that's and then you go to Trayvon Henderson, and then you go to Pop, and then you go to Ramondre Stevenson. Like
Hunter Henry?
Yeah, but Hunter Henry, like, if you remember in 2021, he was mostly a red zone guy.
Big time.
Jones.
He had 9 touchdowns that year, I believe.
Right, and so I just, maybe that's where Stephon Diggs is his role.
And that's what you would hope, as a guy like Stephon Diggs being a legitimate number one receiver in the past. That's what you want out of him. He is going to be your chain mover. He's going to be 3rd and 6. We need to complete a pass. You're going to go to Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, you really need a guy like that.
If he's not that, though, you don't have one. Like, that's kind of the issue, and that's been the issue all along. That's why we were clamoring for you to go trade for a guy like DK Metcalf, or trade for Terry McLaurin if he is available, or George Pickens, or whoever, and they just chose not to. And
hear
so you're hoping Stephon Diggs is that guy.
Efton Chisholm.
You hope so. Hey, he could be. He might be.
I was early on it.
Because he makes the roster, right, at this point?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's on the team.
He's on the team. There you go. Thanks so much for tuning in today, Mego and Scheim. It was a lot of fun for 3 hours. Mego, good job by you.
Thanks, you too.
We will be back next Saturday, which will be, I think, our final Saturday show, at least of the calendar year, as we will be sliding over to Sundays, I believe.
Yes.
So that'll be fun. Football right around the corner, but you can get your fill today. A little college football on the slate for you, but most importantly, keep it locked right here. Red Sox baseball, MassMutual pregame show starts in just a couple of minutes. Don't go anywhere. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's Chris Scheim and Megan Ottolini here on Boston Sports Original WEEI.